This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. A quiet evening at home, a day off, a holiday. They present us with some time for getting into the kitchen and baking something that will please the senses. Bread, cookies, cake, pizza. Well, this afternoon we're going to talk about baking with food writer Jack Bishop of America's Test Kitchen, publisher of Cooks Illustrated and Cooks Country. The folks at America's Test Kitchen have a new cookbook out that's all about baking. It's called the America's Test Kitchen Family Baking Book. It's a five-ring binder with 24 tabs that divide the book into sections, including quick breads and muffins, rolls and loaves, flatbreads and pizza, fancy cookies, pies, pastries, wedding cake, light baking, and shortcut baking. And that's just to name some of the sections in this book. The book holds more than 700 recipes, as well as tutorials and product readings. Listeners, if you have a question or questions about baking, join us this afternoon with a phone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And when you call in this afternoon, we'll get your name and a phone number. And before the 2 o'clock newscast this afternoon, we'll put all the names into a hat. And the winner will receive a copy of the America's Test Kitchen Family Baking Book. Our guest, Jack Bishop, is the editorial director of America's Test Kitchen, and he oversees editorial operations at both magazines. He's also the author of several cookbooks, including A Year in a Vegetarian Kitchen and Vegetables Every Day. In addition to publishing the magazines, America's Test Kitchen also has two top-rated PBS television programs, America's Test Kitchen and Cooks Country from America's Test Kitchen. Our guest is a cast member on America's Test Kitchen. Both programs air on WILL-TV and WILL-DT Saturday afternoons beginning at 12:30. And now let me share two more items with you about Jack Bishop. He and his wife have two daughters, and his wife, Lauren Chatman, is a former pastry chef. Again, listeners, if you'd like to join us this afternoon with questions about baking, give us a call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Jack Bishop, welcome. Good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm well, Celeste. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. So what are the baking favorites in the Bishop Chatman family?
We are a cookie family.
Yeah.
You know, everybody in my family has got their favorite cookies, and my wife is a not only a great baker, but a great planner. And so at any given moment, she makes batches of cookie dough, rolls them into balls, and then freezes them, and when they're frozen, throws them into Ziploc bags. So we probably have at any given moment between 2 and 4 different types of cookies that are already been pre-portioned,
wow,
sitting in the freezer for after-school snacks, after-dinner snacks, cookies made in the morning to go into lunch bags, you know, 1 or 2 cookies at a time. So we have a lot of cookies. We're really into cookies in my household.
You and the girls are really lucky.
We're very, very lucky.
Yeah.
My children bring extra cookies sometimes for their friends at school, and all their friends have favorite cookies that Rose or Eve's mom makes. So.
Yeah. So what are the girls' favorites?
Rose's favorite, and Rose is 13 and she's in 8th grade, is a chocolate chip cookie with espresso powder and Heath bar.
Wow.
Bars that are sort of chopped up. She's very sophisticated. And Eve, who's 9, I think her favorite, she goes back and forth, is a chocolate cookie that's got chocolate sprinkles on it and is a real chocolate lover's cookie. So.
Mm-hmm. So, maybe we would talk about cookies here this afternoon a bit at the top, because this is the time of year when a lot of people make cookies, fancy cookies, drop cookies, icebox, and cookie cutter cookies. These are three sections in the book that you have. So, let's talk a little bit about cookies. Where should we start?
Well, I think, you know, the most important cookie at this time of year is your basic rolled cookie,
mm-hmm,
and that, you know, everybody needs a rolled cookie. that is going to behave, that is, you know, not going to fall apart or stick when you roll, and that's going to cut out nicely. And, you know, our recipe has some interesting tricks to it. It calls for superfine sugar rather than regular sugar. And if you don't have regular sugar, I mean, if you don't have superfine sugar, you can use the regular sugar. You can just put it in the food processor for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Superfine sugar is usually what bartenders use because it dissolves so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's really good in a very simple butter cookie, because it dissolves so nicely and you just get a really delicate crumb. So that's one thing that's unusual about it. I think probably the most unusual thing is that our holiday cookie recipe has some cream cheese in it in addition to the butter.
Uh-huh.
And that rather than creaming the butter and sugar, our recipe begins by combining the flour and sugar and salt together, and then you add the butter and the cream cheese, which have been softened piece by piece. And what happens is you end up coating, the fat coats the flour in a different way, and you're less likely to get the sugar to sort of melt, and you just get this cookie that is really interesting. It's called reverse creaming. So rather than sort of beating the butter and sugar, you beat the butter into the flour and sugar together.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and the dough behaves really easily, and I think for people who struggled with how to get their rolled cookie dough to behave, this dough is just much easier to work with and ends up with a baked cookie that just has a really delicate, you know, it's a little crisp. It doesn't rise too much because you need a rolled cookie that's pretty flat so that you can decorate it and frost it, and just it behaves nicely.
Okay. How long did it take you to find the right combination? This sounds like you had to go through a lot of stuff there in the test kitchen to reach this recipe.
Yeah, when we're developing recipes, you know, if things go well, we might do 30 or 40 different tests, which means that we make 30 or 40 different batches of whatever that recipe is. More often than not, if it's a baking recipe, because baking is so complex, we end up making 60, 70, 80 batches, fine-tuning it to get a recipe that we think is not only the best recipe, but the most reliable recipe and one that people at home are going to be able to have success with.
Yeah. So on the day you do cookies in the test kitchen, and the good news is we're doing cookies, the bad news is we're doing 40 batches of cookies.
Oh, yeah. And it usually goes on for weeks and weeks and weeks. So you know, at the beginning of any of these projects, you think, oh, gosh, I love chocolate layer cake with chocolate frosting. 2 weeks into it, you know, when they're calling you down to eat more chocolate cake, you like chocolate cake a little bit less.
Yeah, enough is enough. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon is Jack Bishop of America's Test Kitchen. The Test Kitchen has a new book out. It is all about baking, the America's Test Kitchen Family Baking Book. And we're going to give one away this afternoon to one of our listeners who calls in this afternoon. Listeners, if you've got a question about baking, give us a call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Let's take a call now from a listener in Farmer City on line 4. Hi.
Hi. I don't know if you've already addressed this, but my question is, I would really like to know how to cut back on the use of butter. I love sugar cookies, but I'm watching my saturated fat. And I wondered if there's a way to make sugar cookies successfully by cutting back just a little bit on the butter. And I wondered how to do that. So I'll just hang up and listen. Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon.
You know, butter cookies, trimming the butter is really hard. And, I mean, I know this is going to sound a little bit like a cop-out, but, you know, either make something else, or say I'm going to make the butter cookies, but I'm going to make them and enjoy them just once during the holidays. I mean, with a recipe that really is just sugar, flour, and butter with a little bit of vanilla and a little bit of salt, there's really not much wiggle room. And, you know, the butter substitutes or margarines, besides the fact that they don't taste very good, they just don't work. And so the texture is compromised as well as the flavor. And so a butter cookie is about that and pie dough are the two things that we've experimented with over the years trying to make a low-fat version. And because basically they're just fat, sugar, and flour, we've given up because there's just no way to really do it and come up with something that we think is credible. And I think you're better off thinking about alternative types of cookies or alternative baked goods. You know, make a quick bread, a cranberry nut bread, which is something that's got a lot less fat and something that you can really make. You can trim some fat because there's so many other ingredients and flavors going on.
Yeah. Now, the caller mentioned butter cookies, but there are some light sugar cookies in the book. And what you do is you cut down on the butter, but there is butter in there. I mean, there's no going around it. They apparently go, they dry out a little sooner than other cookies, but looks pretty good.
Yeah, those are a chewy, slightly puffy sugar cookie. Mm-hmm. It's dusted with a little bit of sugar as opposed to like a rolled holiday butter cookie. And these are not rolled cookies, they're drop cookies. And yeah, I mean, the tricks here are, obviously you can cut back on the butter. It's the mixing method that's a little unique here. And then again, using cake flour in these cookies, because with less butter, they can get tough if you use regular all-purpose flour. So our recipe for a sugar cookie calls for a combination of cake flour and all-purpose flour, which is pretty unusual in a cookie recipe. And so, they have the texture of a oatmeal cookie or a chocolate chip cookie in the sense they're chewy and a little crispy around the edges and they puff a little bit. It may be that it's better to look to a different type of cookie than thinking, I'm going to do that classic crisp, rolled, thin butter cookie for the holidays, which is just hard to do with less butter.
Yeah, okay. Let's take another call. A listener on line one joining us from Champaign. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about converting from like an all-purpose flour or white flour to whole wheat flour. I have heard that you do a 3/4 cup as opposed to a full cup. But then you add some liquid as well, and I know it's whole wheat pastry flour, not just regular whole wheat flour, and I'll get off and listen. Thank you.
Okay.
The formula that we generally use, and it's one that you really have to experiment with, is if a recipe calls for all-purpose flour, we've had pretty good results replacing 1/4 to 1/3 of that flour with just regular whole wheat flour. I mean, if you have whole wheat pastry flour, especially for a pie dough or maybe a cookie, that's a nice thing to use. But regular whole wheat flour, as long as you're not using more than, if the recipe calls for a cup of all-purpose flour, to use 3/4 of a cup of all-purpose flour along with 1/4 cup of whole wheat flour. Get some whole grains into the cookie or to the quick bread or to the regular cake. When you start getting above 25% or 30% whole wheat flour, you really have to re-engineer the recipe. And so, you're sort of starting from scratch at that point. But if you really have a favorite recipe that you've made with all-purpose flour that you want to convert to using some whole wheat flour, swap out 1/4 cup or 1/3 cup for every cup of the regular flour and see how that goes.
Okay. Let's take another call now. A listener in Decatur on line two. Good afternoon.
Yeah, a quick question. I'd like to know what the possibility is for changing out lard and so forth and moving to canola oil or one of the lighter oils and pie crusts and so forth, and I'll just listen to your comments.
Okay, is going to take the answer off the air?
Yeah, so, you have a couple choices with pie dough. You have solid fats or liquid fats, and, lard makes a great crust. It has great flavor and produces a flaky texture. The modern equivalent that we end up using, because lard is pretty hard to find, is a combination of a little bit of shortening and the rest butter. And the shortening doesn't have any flavor, but it gives it the flaky texture that you want in the pie crust, and the butter is there for flavor. You can also use all butter, and we have a recipe for an all butter crust. Oil crust, we've really found, have a more cookie-like or shortbread-like texture, and they're crisp and tough rather than flaky and tender. And in terms of a regular rolled pie crust, we really just don't think you can make a credible one with oil. It just isn't the same. And that, if you want to make a cracker crust, like a graham cracker crust, which usually calls for melted butter, you can certainly use oil in place of them. They'll be less flavorful, but the texture will be pretty much the same. But in a rolled pastry crust, we really feel like you need to stick with the butter.
Yeah. I found this really fun, just really interesting, and I don't know what the chemistry is behind this, and I don't have the book open to this page right now, but in the pie dough section, there's a foolproof recipe which includes 1/4 cup of vodka.
Oh, love this recipe. So the challenge with a traditional pie dough is that for optimal texture, you want as little liquid as possible. You know, usually you add ice water. Once you've combined the fat and the flour, you add some ice water to bring it together. And in terms of minimizing gluten development and maximizing flakiness and tenderness, you want to keep the water to just the bare minimum. But when you're going to roll out the dough, a dough with a bare minimum of water is really difficult to work with. And it cracks, it splits, and it's just hard to work with. And so it's always this sort of devil's choice. Do I add more water so that it's easier to roll out, but then the dough doesn't bake up as flaky? Or do I add very little water and it's really difficult to work with, but it's going to bake up better? We found that by replacing half of the ice water with chilled vodka, we could get the best of both worlds. The dough has plenty of moisture in it, so it's easy to roll out. But the alcohol in the vodka doesn't react with the proteins to form gluten. And so it doesn't get any form, any toughness in the baked crust. And the alcohol evaporates in the oven. And so you can't taste it, and there's no alcohol left. And you've got a dough that's very easy and supple to roll out, yet it bakes up really tender and really flaky as if you had used very little liquid in the dough to start with.
Eureka.
Yeah, it was one of those sort of, you know, aha moments in the test kitchen where we just said, isn't this a cool idea? And it's really gotten so, you know, it's just one of these recipes that just is much better than the conventional method. And you wouldn't really think of putting vodka in your pie dough. But trust me, no one will taste it in your pie dough. You'll be the only one who knows that there was vodka. The alcohol dissipates, and it really is a much better dough, and it's easier to work with.
Okay, let's take another call. A listener in Champaign on line one. Good afternoon.
Hi. Do you have a good Christmas recipe for a Christmas cake along the lines of maybe a spicy cake with fruit or a fruit cake?
We have gingerbreads, but I think if you're looking for a classic fruitcake, I don't think we have a recipe that's going to probably fall into what you're thinking of. We have spice cakes that are layer cakes. We have gingerbreads, but I don't think we have a fruitcake recipe. If you're looking for a sort of classic, you know, rum-soaked fruitcake with bits of candied fruit and nuts in it.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, unfortunately... you know, it's one of those recipes we've talked about. There's a small group of people that love fruitcake and a larger group of people that, you know, give fruitcake but don't necessarily perhaps...
They like giving it.
They like giving it. I'm not sure they like eating it.
Well, you know, I'm not fond of that fruit bread with all that wildly colored stuff in it, but there's a wonderful fruitcake recipe that Alton Brown has developed. So look for him online, and I'm sorry I don't have it at my fingertips here, but it is made with real dried fruit, and then it's good right out of the oven. It's a fruity cake, and you can do the brandy or the bourbon if you like, or if you don't, you don't have to. But anyway, we've made it and served it, and people who swear they don't like fruitcake like it.
Thank you.
Yeah. So good luck with that. Thanks for the call. Let's take another call. A listener on line two in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Hi. Everybody seems to be asking the same sorts of questions, and that is how do you make recipes lower fat or healthier? And I had a question about using something like Splenda in place of sugar. I've been trying to use the... Splenda brown sugar mixture in some recipes, and I've been trying to substitute regular Splenda for sugar, and I wondered if you guys have tried using that and found anything that works particularly well.
You know, we have experimented with Splenda and you know, the brown sugar, and there are two issues that you need to keep in mind. I mean, we haven't been all that terribly successful. They're better than the other artificial sweeteners, but there are two issues to be thinking about. One is flavor, and that, you know, some in a side-by-side test, people who are used to sugar are probably going to notice the difference with something made with Splenda. I think the more important issue is that sugar in many baking recipes is actually a liquid ingredient because it melts and it controls texture. And so, for instance, the way cookies spread in the oven depends upon the amount and type of sugar that is in the cookie, or the moisture in a brownie or in a cake. A lot of that moisture really comes from the sugar, and that the Splenda behaves differently. And so it's not necessarily disastrous. I don't want to make it sound like you can't use it, but a lot of times things will be drier. And so that if you have a cake that you love and you end up using the Splenda for baking, it may turn out to be drier than you're used to. Or the cookies may not spread quite as much, and so therefore they don't get those thin, crispy edges on your favorite chocolate chip cookie. It's a sort of one-by-one case of, you know, trying the recipe and seeing if it works, making that substitution. But I think that's something to be concerned about. And, you know, especially because they dry out, to check things early and perhaps pull them out of the oven a little early.
Would it work to put a little more regular liquid, whatever the recipe calls for, water or eggs or milk or something?
Yeah, I mean, you can try. I mean, the problem with making generalizations like this is that, you know, baking is chemistry.
Yeah.
And each baking recipe has its own formula, and once you start changing the formula, you don't know how changing one variable is going to affect the next.
Collateral damage.
I mean, you can try. I don't want to overpromise as to what to do, and, you know, each type of recipe is different. You know, I think things that are less texture-driven, like puddings, you may have more success with. I mean, I think it's the baked goods where, you know, the cookies just don't have the same texture, or the brownie isn't quite as moist when you try using a sweetener other than sugar.
I see. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call this afternoon. And for that fellow who called about the fruitcake, you know what I'm thinking, Jack, is that there is in the section on bun cakes and tube cakes, there are some nice recipes in there that are sort of in that kind of mood, if you would. The pecan bourbon bun cake, that looks pretty darn good. And the apple dapple cake.
Those are two great recipes.
Yeah.
I love the apple to apple cake. I love anything with apples. I'm not sure if you're looking for a classic holiday fruitcake. I'm not sure that really is going to qualify. It's the apple to apple cake has a brown sugar glaze, and then the cake is made with walnuts and with Granny Smith apples. And it's a spice cake.
Yeah.
It's got cinnamon in it, and it's baked in a tube pan. But that old fashioned classic sticky fruitcake. Either you love it or you don't. But it is a classic at this time of year.
Okay, let's take another call now. Listener on line 3 in Mahomet. Hi. Line 3.
Well, I'm line 3, but I'm in Champaign.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's my mistake.
That's okay.
I need to get my glasses readjusted here. All right. Line 3, Champaign.
Right. I don't bake very often, and I was wondering how long you can keep flour and if it makes any difference if it's in the refrigerator.
Great question. All-purpose flour, white flour, if you keep it in a sealed container or if you drop the bag into a large Ziploc, it'll last a long, long time. It's probably fine for a year or longer. If you really are going to, not be using it for a year, it's better off in the freezer rather than the refrigerator. Whole grain flours, now this would be whole wheat flour or cornmeal, because they're whole grain flours, they have the natural oils. And unless you're going to use those within about 3 months, you should always store them in the freezer because they can go rancid on you. The whole wheat flour, most people are not using a whole lot of it. It just, slip that bag, a paper bag in a Ziploc, or just transfer the flour to a Tupperware and keep it in the refrigerator. It'll be fine for a year in the freezer rather than the refrigerator, excuse me.
And how long will flour keep without being in the refrigerator,
regular white flour should be fine for about a year in your pantry, and the biggest
about
problem.
The same.
The biggest problem is probably going to be bugs, which is hard to
Yeah, I have it in a Tupperware, but
then it's going to be fine. I mean, and it isn't like something at a year is going to happen. I'm not sure I'd want to make cookies with 10-year-old flour. That may be pushing it, but if it gets to a year, 18 months. and you used your flour, it'll be fine.
Yeah, thank you.
You're very welcome. Let's take another call. Now we go to Muhammad, a listener on line one. Hi.
I really love your magazines. I subscribe to them both, and I watch both your shows.
Thank you.
I have a question about chocolate chip cookies. I found a recipe that was a basic Toll House recipe, and the big difference was that they recommended refrigerating the dough for 24 hours before actually making the cookies, which most recipes I've seen don't do. I was wondering, and they turned out great that way, I think, because the flour hydrated with moisture more. And I was wondering whether or not that would be something I should generally try and do with all cookie recipes, or whether this is just a phenomenon for Toll House cookies.
Yeah, I think we must be reading the same newspapers or magazines, because we've seen that recipe has now been circulating, where the notion is, you put the chocolate chip cookie dough in the refrigerator overnight. And we've been trying around with it because we're working on actually, we never sort of rest on our laurels, and we're working on a, fourth generation chocolate chip cookie now in the test kitchen. And we're not sure we're convinced about the resting. We haven't decided. We're working on a story that's going to get published next year in Cook's Illustrated magazine. Sometimes we feel like it makes a difference and that our tasters can tell the difference, and sometimes we're not so sure. So, unfortunately, I'm not going to leave you with much advice other than to say that it's something we're experimenting with, and stay tuned.
Okay, great. I'll look forward to the magazine. Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine, Jack Bishop. He's the editorial director of America's Test Kitchen, and he oversees editorial operations at both magazines, Cook's Illustrated and Cook's Country. He's also the author of several cookbooks, including A Year in a Vegetarian Kitchen and Vegetables Every Day. Today we're talking about baking. The folks at America's Test Kitchen have a new book out, the America's Test Kitchen Family Baking Book, and it's a five-ring binder. It has 24 tabs in it and more than 700 recipes in it. All kinds of things here in this book. Muffins, flatbreads, pizza, fancy cookies, pies, savory tarts, you name it, it's here, except for the fruitcake. So, listeners, if you'd like to join us this afternoon, give us a call, 333-9455, 800-222-9455. And we're going to give away a copy of this book this afternoon to one of the folks who has called in to talk with us. Let's take another call now. We go next to Villa Grove, line two. Hi. Line two. Okay.
Are you there now?
Yeah, we got you now.
Okay, you got me now?
Yep.
Okay, I had a question and a comment. The question was, what is your favorite holiday treat, cookies or any kind? Which one is your favorite? And then the comment was about the fruitcake recipe. I know that on the AM Focus 580, actually, they did a show with the resident cook, and they did a whole program, and it was 20, 30 minutes. It did dealt with just fruitcakes.
That's right. Thanks for reminding me. David Inge and Doyle Moore talked about fruitcake. So those recipes, actually, I bet they might be on our website, which is will.illinois.edu. So thanks for calling in with that. Was there anything else, Villa Grove? No? Okay. Let's take another call. Pardon me?
I said that. I was just wanting to ask about your favorite recipe.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, what's your favorite treat?
Two things that I look forward to every holiday that basically only have once a year in my home. Christmas dinner, creme brulee, is a family favorite. I'm not really sure how the tradition has started, but the children look forward to it because one who doesn't love a rich vanilla pudding with a crackling burnt sugar crust. I think they also look forward to it because they get to use the creme brulee torch, and it's a Christmas activity in our household is the making of creme brulee. The other thing is the cookie that I love the best and is a tremendous amount of work, but it's probably why we only have it once a year, is a rugola cookie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a dough that's made with cream cheese and butter, and you roll out the cookie into a round, and then you cover it with apricot jam, chopped walnuts, and raisins, and some cinnamon sugar, and then you roll it up and cut it into little, like it was like with a pizza wheel, and then you roll it up, rather, and you bake these cookies, and they are sugary, and they have, they're delicious, and they're flaky, and they're, each one is like a little piece of artwork, and I think it's my favorite cookie that I eat all year and only get at this time of year.
Yeah, and there's a tutorial on that in the book.
Yeah, this is the recipe we make in my household, and, you know, this is a recipe that, as I say, every year I look forward to making it, and it's, you know, it's a lot of work. It's not the kind of cookie you're going to whip up after school for the kids, but for the holidays, it's just got all those flavors of, you know, the apricot jam and the walnuts and the raisins and the cinnamon that say sort of the holidays to me.
Okay, let's take another call. A listener on line 3 in Champaign. Hello.
Hi, I was just wondering what kind of yeast you find most reliable and then if it should be stored in the refrigerator.
Okay, good question.
Yeah, yeast belongs in the refrigerator, and pay attention to those expiration dates. Most every brand has expiration dates printed on them, and the yeast just stops working. And so, you know, don't buy yeast with an expiration date that isn't, you know, many, many months away, and then if you end up not using it, throw it out. I mean, yeast doesn't cost very much money, and if you've invested a lot of time and energy making a baked good and using old yeast and it doesn't rise, you're going to be disappointed, and there's really no way to know other than looking at that expiration date. In terms of types of yeast, we like to use the instant or the rapid rise yeast. You get a little bit more oomph out of them. They're a little bit more reliable. You don't have to proof them. With the old-fashioned active dry yeast, you had to sort of dissolve the yeast in warm water. The instant yeast can be added directly to doughs. And so the brands are all pretty much equal. Some are called instant. Some companies call it rapid rise. But that's the kind of yeast we use in the test kitchen.
Okay, very good. Next, we go to a listener in Chicago on line 4. Hello.
Hi. I had a quick question regarding your storage of flour, whole white flour in a pantry. You mentioned that after some time you might have a problem with bugs. I'm just wondering, where do the bugs come from? Were there eggs in the flour to begin with, or are these things that have crept in after you put it in storage?
I think it's a good question, and I think it might be either. You know, I think that since I had personal experience in my house with flour in sealed containers, and it's more likely not white flour, but it seems to be more a problem with, you know, cornmeal and stuff like that. Having some critters, especially in the warm weather, it makes me feel like some of that stuff may have been there to begin with. But I think, you know, you can also get problems, especially if things are not in sealed containers, with, you know, things making their way into your grains in the pantry. And I guess more problems in the warm weather than in the cold weather.
Okay.
Enjoyed a lot.
All right. Thanks for the call this afternoon. Next, we'll go to line 1. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. I have two questions, maybe a comment. I wanted to find out for years what the answers were. One is, when I go to places like Atlanta Bread Company and Panera, and they have pastries, and when I eat them, they turn to paste, literally, seems like, and I was wondering why that is. And the other question is, when I travel sometimes, I go to these little towns, and it's kind of like little mom-and-pop places, and they have pie that really is not very brown a lot of times, and it's kind of like the texture of a very tender tortilla, the crust is. And I was wondering, you know, because you talked about pie crust earlier, how that happens, because they're very tender, but sometimes they, like, make you a little semicircle and pinch it off, and you can carry it with you. So I just wondered what that was.
I'm a little stumped by both of them. I mean, when the last question, I was thinking that, you know, one of the things that we find really important with pie dough is to brown it really well, and that why we like bake all of our pies in a Pyrex so that we can really see what's going on, and that glass transfers heat really well, and that a soft pie dough, you know, to some extent, everything is personal taste, but we really think a brown, flaky, somewhat crisp pie dough is usually a better pie dough, and that it does better in glass than metal, for instance, in terms of the browning. You know, the first thing about the sort of pastry turning to paste, I'm not sure I completely understand.
Well, you eat a muffin from one of these places, and you're chewing it. It turns into paste and very sticky. It's like eating paste instead of, is that what they call crumb? Because like when my wife makes a muffin, it doesn't do that. It stands up to being chewed and swallowed.
Right. So, now I understand what you're saying. So yes, the interior of a baked good, especially a muffin or cake, bakers refer to that as the crumb. And, you know, the crumb can be very sturdy. The crumb can be have very fine and have, you know, like a pound cake has a very fine crumb, or the crumb can be very coarse. A lot of muffins have a fairly coarse crumb, meaning that there are lots of holes in the crumb. You know, a lot of that may be the moisture content and how old the baked good is, and that, you know, that the sort of the crumb is deteriorating as it ages, in the sense of, you know, freshly made versus a day or two old. The other thing is oil versus butter, and that a lot of commercial cakes and muffins are not made with butter because butter is much, much more expensive than oil. And has, you know, the price differential has just gotten even more in the last couple of years, and that moist stickiness is often a sign that the muffin or the cake was made with oil rather than with butter.
Well, I've just given up on buying those. I mean, as far as the crumb goes, it's crummy. So I just wanted to know if there was something, because I much prefer the homemade stuff. It just stands up and it's really good. So thank you very much.
There you go. Thanks for the call this afternoon. Let's take another call. Listener on line two, good afternoon. Line two?
Hi.
Hi.
My question is, I have a 14-year-old son who loves to bake, and we were wondering, like, what kind of education do you have to get a job at America's Test Kitchen? I'm going to hang up and listen.
Okay.
Most everyone in our test kitchen has a liberal arts college degree. They've got a degree in English or history or science of some sort. And then most everyone has been to cooking school and has professional training. And at some point, they decide they want to sort of combine writing with cooking. And so have both of those backgrounds, and they're able to do that working in the test kitchen. And so... you know, my advice people ask me is, you know, do both if you can. You know, get professional cooking training, but there's nothing like a liberal arts college degree.
Okay. Our guest this afternoon in this portion of the afternoon magazine is Jack Bishop. He's editorial director of America's Test Kitchen and oversees editorial operations at both Cook's Illustrated and Cook's Country magazines. He's the author of several cookbooks in his own right, including A Year in a Vegetarian Kitchen and Vegetables Every Day. The America's Test Kitchen has a new book out. It is the America's Test Kitchen Family Baking Book, and that's what we're talking about here this afternoon, baking. Let's go ahead and take another call now. I think we're going to go to line three, a listener in Urbana or on a cell phone. I'm not quite sure. Line three, hi.
Well, I'm on a cell phone, and I'm in Muhammad.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's close enough.
Okay.
I had two questions. One on the frozen cookie dough. Are when you freeze the dough, is it just rolls of cookie dough, or is it a rolled cookie dough sliced, or how do you affect that? And the other one is on bread baking.
Okay.
Okay, well, let me answer the first question, then you can ask me about bread baking. I mean, you can take any drop cookie.
Yes.
And roll it into the size balls that the recipe says. You know, if it says tablespoon or portions, put them on a parchment-lined baking sheet in the freezer,
right?
Or on a plate. And once they're frozen, then you can just throw them into a Ziploc bag. But you need to sort of freeze them separate from each other, so obviously they don't freeze into one big ball. And then you've got individual portions, and you can, you know, bake one cookie at a time, two cookies at a time, whatever you feel like.
Well, that sounds interesting. I'm going to try that.
Okay, thanks for the call. Let's take another call. Listener on line one, cell phone, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Calling about substituting for oil in baking. I know you can use applesauce in cakes and sometimes cookies, but is there anything else?
You know, it really varies. I mean, we've had success with replacing some of the oil in a carrot cake with carrot baby food. You know, that's sort of a specific example. I wouldn't probably put carrot baking food in anything other, a baby food rather than in a carrot cake. We've had some success of recipes that have butter, replacing them with a little bit of low-fat cream cheese. But, you know, the reality is that fat, it's hard to replace the fat altogether. And, you know, oil, you know, obviously you can use melted butter, but if you're trying to save fat calories, that's not going to really do much for you, than replacing the oil with melted butter.
I know they have the sugar substitutes, but no fat substitutes yet, huh?
No, not really. I mean, it's hard to do without that when you're talking about baking.
Yeah, the applesauce, I find it makes it sort of flat. So.
Yeah, it's a little gummy, and it doesn't really work. I mean, it works somewhat, but it's not the same.
Right. Okay, well, thank you.
You're welcome. Let's take another call. A listener now on line 2. Good afternoon. Let's see if we go to. I really want to thank Henry Frayne. He's doing an outstanding job today in the master control, answering the phone and getting a name and a phone number so we can give away a copy of this beautiful book, The America's Test Kitchen Family Baking Book. So, what do you say? We're going to go to line 2. Okay. Thanks, Henry. Line 2. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
Fine. How are you?
Good. I just asked a question a moment ago about a cookie, and I had one on bread.
Oh, okay.
But my question on bread was, I'm attempting to get into baking bread, and I'm trying all different things, and I'm trying to duplicate my mother's, which I think I'll never will do, because hers was basically touch and feel. I've got my bread down now to where it seems to have a very tight crumb, but it just doesn't, I can't get it to open up. In other words, you know what I mean? It's too tight. It's more like cake, like I baked it with cake dough instead of bread dough or bread flour.
And what kind of flour are you using?
Bread flour, gold medal.
Hmm.
It
sounds to me like it's not rising enough.
Okay, that's
possible. And you may... You know, one of the things we do if you're having trouble with the dough rising is to let it rise in an oven that was turned to 200 degrees for 10 minutes and then turn off the oven.
Right.
And use your oven kind of as a proofing box, and that the yeast seems to do a little bit better in there. It sounds to me like it may not be rising enough.
That's probably what it is. It's just, I thought maybe I was, I have a handheld mixer that I mix it with. It has a double spiral dough hook on it. And you can really mix a long time with that, and to the point where you almost, you know, it gets starts getting. So I have to watch that. But I thought maybe that was affecting it.
Yeah, you know, more kneading is not necessarily better. I mean, once the dough comes together and sort of clears the sides of the bowl,
right,
forms a cohesive dough. Stop. I mean, more kneading actually causes problems in some cases. And the other thing is to really make sure that the dough is doubling when you rise it, and you know. In the sense that it's twice as big when you're...
Can bread rise too high? Can it rise too much?
Yeah. I mean, you can over-rise, and what will happen with an over-risen loaf is that when it goes into the oven, it collapses,
okay,
and that you get, you know, sort of deflated center or something. But it, from what the problem you're describing, it's more likely that you're not letting it rise enough, and that if you've got a drafty kitchen or a cool kitchen, you know, putting it in the oven is one way to sort of mitigate those effects. The other thing is just time, and it may need that you're just not letting it rise long enough, and you just need to leave it on the counter, but let it rise another half hour or hour.
Well, I've been using my oven as a proofer, and so I think I'm just not letting it rise high enough. I was afraid I was going to let it rise too much, so.
Good luck.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your help.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call this afternoon. And there we'll wrap it up. We are out of time. Jack, that was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
My pleasure, Celeste.
Jack Bishop is the editorial director of America's Test Kitchen. The Test Kitchen has a new book out all about baking, the America's Test Kitchen Family Baking Book.